One of the insidious things about sex addiction and addiction to lust is there's always that idea, well, you know, I'm not really hurting anybody. It's a natural process. God gave it, you know, so what is it really hurting? And, you know, that worked for a while. Although I did start to have to ask myself, well, if I'm hiding stuff, if I'm being dishonest, if I'm not liking who I am, why? You know, what is it that really is this really hurting anybody? And it probably wasn't until I reached bottom and saw my marriage fall apart that I couldn't live that lie anymore and say, well, this isn't hurting anybody. In my young adult years, the shame of struggling with this addiction, and the only way I knew of coping with it was to hide it, make sure nobody knew, and I worked pretty hard at doing that. The problem is the consequences of hiding that, you know, were just destroying me, destroying my core. I didn't like who I was, so I worked really hard to advance my career, worked really hard to involve myself in the church. I became a head deacon and was working really hard because I didn't like who I was. And I figured, you know, at some level, if I accomplished a lot, it would kind of balance out, and it never did. Around that time, I got the internet, and if I had an addiction, then I just poured gasoline on the fire. The accessibility of pornography on the internet just made things explode, and I really started losing any control. And internet pornography was a daily occurrence, and having to hide it from family, anybody. You know, I didn't want to share it with anybody. I couldn't share it with anybody. And so it just grew.
Welcome to Unhooked. My name is Pastor Bernie. Today we're talking about sex and porn addiction, and our guest for the program, Dr. Calvin Thompson and Paul Conniff is here with us, and we're great to have you guys.
Good to be here.
So when I hear sex addiction, and the first time I heard it, I remember thinking, could it even be an addiction? Talk to us a little bit about that. Is it really an addiction?
Yeah, as far as the effects in the brain, it can work just like any other addiction. Process addictions can be just as addictive as substance addictions. And one of the things about it, it's not really as much about sex as it is about the whole addictive process, because a lot of people will actually have a good marriage, a good relationship where they could be sexual, but the biggest thing about the sexual addiction is that there is a compulsion that somehow involves sex, but it does not involve an actual whole relationship where they're really connected with the whole person.
Wow. So talk to us a little bit about the behaviors that come with someone who may be sexually addicted.
Well, it could be someone who's going to look into pornography and masturbating. There's voyeurism. I know some people start looking at porn, but then I work with them and later we find out they're getting into child porn. So that behavior becomes a lot of more self-centered about them also.
Sure. So is there something that does it escalate? Does it become more? Do they get into more risky behavior or more demeaning behavior?
Yeah, one of the things about addiction is not just the compulsion, you know, feeling I have to do it, but what often happens is the initial impact wears off. You know, it kind of gets old, and then you say, hey, I need something a little bit more exciting, and it really progresses to the point where whatever was originally satisfying, you know, just kind of doesn't do the trick anymore.
Mm-hmm. We hear a lot about internet pornography and how so many are becoming addicted to that. Why is internet pornography specifically so addictive?
I would say one thing is it's so accessible. Mm. It's a click away.
Yeah.
There was a time when people wouldn't be caught going to, you know, the local store to get an X-rated video.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about that anymore. You can have that right in the comfort of your own home, the privacy. So the secrecy factor, I think, escalates it a lot.
Sure.
And the availability factor.
For sure. Do you add anything to that, Dr.?
Yeah, just the thing is that with internet, you know, you can be right there in the home with, you know, your family, your spouse, and just in a different room. And sometimes the spouse is saying, honey, are you getting ready to come to bed? And the guy is saying, you know, wait a minute, honey, not quite yet. And so he actually has a relationship there where he could be with the real live person.
Yeah.
But there it is right in his home on the screen. And Miss Pixel sometimes is a whole lot easier than the wife.
Yeah.
You know, Miss Pixel never says, honey, did you remember to take out the garbage? Miss Pixel,
She doesn't demand much from you.
Miss Pixel just says, ooh, ah, you know, you're wonderful, and she lives out your fantasies. And, you know, you have that aspect, but what you miss is the whole richness of an entire relationship with an actual person.
With a real person, for sure. Man, you hear so much about this addiction in particular, and it's growing, it's very popular. Talk a little bit about the power of anonymity in it, because I know that the fact that it's accessible and it's available, but the fact that you're anonymous, that you can sit in the privacy of your own home and just consume large amounts of pornography, what is that doing to men in particular?
One of the things about the anonymity is that it disconnects you from actual relationships, and that's one of the reasons it's progressive, because a lot of addictive chemicals from just the brain research shows they are actually locking up the brain receptors that were made for relationships. Mm. And so you get the high, but you don't get the context of the relationship. So the anonymity often means a person's very isolated. And that's one of the reasons why one of the best ways to begin to achieve wholeness is to have a better relationship context, have friends, have people you're connected with, and people you can talk to.
Yeah.
Anything anonymous tends to kind of spiral. It can get out of control really fast.
I always say that pornography is an enemy of intimacy, mm-hmm. that it ultimately destroys intimacy. It destroys relationships, both our relationship with others, mm-hmm. the horizontal relationships, as well as the vertical relationship. It just sort of hollows us out and makes us incapable of relating to people in an appropriate way. Talk about intimacy for a second, Paul, if you would.
Well, intimacy, I mean, are you able to share your thoughts and feelings with somebody else? Are you available to hear them and be available for them to share with you and build relationships? And part of marriage is working through challenges, working through differences, working through struggles with a real-life person. But when we do that, we end up drawing closer to them. Our trust can grow. With pornography, you know, when you've got this fantasy, this woman is everything in your mind that you want her to be.
Mm.
And there's no feedback.
There's nothing coming back.
And they've done actually studies where the more you look at porn, the more numb you get emotionally and you check out more. And you're actually more and more dissatisfied with your sex life, which drives you back into the pornography and the fantasy world.
What?
Yeah, I was going to say it's important to realize that pornography or sexual addiction in general is less about sex than we realize. It's more about just a way of altering moods. You know, often it's a way of just temporarily, man, I feel good right now.
Yeah.
So there is even a chemical imbalance that sometimes happens. You get a little spike of the dopamine and other chemicals inside your brain, and just for a few magic minutes you feel really good. But the problem with it is that good feeling tends to wear off, and then afterwards you kind of crash. And so that in itself is one of the enemies of intimacy, is because what you're achieving is not the holistic relationship, but just the temporary spike, which is what an addiction does.
Yeah. So we sort of cheat ourselves out of something really legitimate that could be really good, but we sort of cheat ourselves by taking the shortcut and getting this high, temporary relief from something that maybe could be something so much better.
Yeah, I've even worked with several couples where the guy was out pursuing other women on his honeymoon.
Wow.
And I raised that point just to point out that it isn't sex. You know, on your honeymoon, you're going to expect some interesting things to be happening with your spouse. But it just shows that the sexual addiction really isn't about sex. It's more about a way of altering one's moods. That even if, you know, good, healthy, wonderful relational sex is available, with the addiction, you want something partial. It's like I say, if I was going to offer you a Lexus, and then I only gave you a steering wheel and a bucket seat and a spare tire, and, you know, sex takes sexual addiction takes sex out of its context.
Yeah, good point. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back.
I didn't understand that, you know, sex and lust could be an addiction. I just knew that it was ruining my life and I didn't know how to stop it. And I felt like I had tried. So it was at that point that I started looking for help. And my first step was to find a 12-step group that I could find people that struggled with the things like I struggled with. And that allowed me at least to realize that I wasn't alone. And, you know, I thought at that point that this might be the answer. And, you know, maybe this will solve everything. But the illusion that, you know, my lust would go away and that I would find just no temptation, that came down pretty hard. As I've fueled that addiction for so many years, and it used it as a coping mechanism to the point of it didn't work for me anymore, it isn't a surprise that when I'm under stress, when I'm not sure how to cope with life, it is and probably will be a temptation for me. I think for a long time, I might have been a little bit willing to turn my life over to God, but to be able to share it with another person, men, especially in the church, you know, we have this idea that we're supposed to be leaders and that, you know, you can't acknowledge that or be honest if you're struggling. It's taken me a long time to recognize that being able to open up and share with another person, I'm not only opening up my life for God to work in my life, but I'm possibly sharing where another person can listen and open up their lives to God too. So to be able to have guys that, you know, could listen to you, not judge you, and be able to call them and be honest and say, you know, I'm struggling now. I need somebody to pray with. It's been a power that I believe only God can give.
Welcome back to Unhooked. We're talking about porn and sex addiction. We have Calvin and Paul here. So, men, you know, we're bombarded with images. So many sexual images, sensual images in the culture, in the media. You can see how so many people are slipping into addiction, sexual addiction. So talk to me a little bit about how we can deal with this. How do we help men interact with the culture and do so in an appropriate way, dealing with this very powerful gift of sexuality that we have?
Yeah, one thing is about it is indeed much more of a problem for men than women, at least visual porn. There's something about the male brain. You know, one of the research studies showed that 98% of all credit cards used for online porn had a male name attached to them.
Wow.
So it just shows you this is a common struggle. There is something about just the visual aspect that does seem to be stronger for men than it is for women.
Yeah.
Also, men are a little bit more likely to kind of hold things in. You know, women are more likely to talk about stuff. And since addiction and relationship and connection are so much kind of at odds with each other, you know, the fact that men are more likely, you know, we're supposed to be the strong, silent type and tough and out in the woods with the bears and everything. We're not supposed to talk about our feelings and so forth, which definitely increases the likelihood of addiction.
For sure. Do you think that perhaps for us guys, if we can have a healthy way to, and a safe place to communicate, to sort of let some of these feelings and emotions come out in an appropriate environment, in the right setting, that it would actually contribute to preventing a lot of guys from slipping into sexual addiction?
Sure. When I work with guys struggling with addiction, I often encourage them to go to like Sex Addictions Anonymous, Sex and Love Addictions Anonymous, different groups like that, because what they find is they feel filled up from the community of other men sharing.
Oh, I love that.
You know, I can go in, share my thoughts, share my feelings, negative struggles, and I know they're going to identify with me. Yeah. I know they're going to connect. Is that the whole, you know, ball of wax for healing and freedom? No, but what it does is it gives them a place to feel supported and connected, and it anchors them in a place where they can share their feelings. They, like Calvin said, they can be honest about who they are.
Yeah, I love that. So you're kind of bringing in the idea of what we're hearing a lot of these days, and that's the idea of accountability or some sort of community group. Speak a little bit more, perhaps, Calvin, maybe you can talk a little bit more about what that means.
Yeah, it isn't just the accountability, although sometimes we need somebody to give us a kick in the backside and say, well, man, you're way off course. This is not what you actually planned for yourself.
Sure.
But since, you know, neuroscience is a big area of my, you know, research, one of the things we know is your brain is designed for relationships. Mm. And just the connection with other people is one of the ways that your brain gets satisfied. Yeah. And so if you're not satisfied, you're going to turn to something addictive just to make up for the deficit. But part of the reason, too, why you know, sexual addictions become particularly problematic is nobody in church talks about it. You know, I was once talking about the fact that most sermons on, you know, impulse or whatever, they're all about, you know, cookies or eating too much at the potluck or something like that. And I say, hey, why can't we talk about some real things people struggle with? Is the only thing Adventists struggle with or people in general? Is it only about church potlucks? And, you know, what about some of, you know.
So true.
It's a lot harder to say, hey, listen, man, I'm struggling with something about sex.
Sometimes we major in the minors, you know, so often. You know, in our story with Todd, he's a young guy that just struggled so deeply with this, and your heart just breaks when you hear his story. But one of the things you heard him say is that there was no place for me to go. Who could I talk to? My church wasn't a safe place. How do we help the church become a place where the sex addict can find an environment where they can begin to talk about what's going on with them and then get on a path towards healing?
People have to start being honest, and usually it's one or two individuals, but we can create those safe places. We're not going to turn around the ship at night. But, you know, if I was working with him, I would want to look at what's that belief system that he has that makes him feel not good about himself to go to porn, because he feels good for a while. But they've shown statistically, after you look at porn and you masturbate, what happens is you don't get the same physiological release, the calming effect, the satisfying effect as with intercourse. So it can, compulsive masturbation sets you up to feel empty, so you need to do it more. So, but I'd want to deal with what's that belief system behind his behavior. If he's feeling I'm not good enough, and he looks at this pixelized woman, and he says, I'm good enough, I'm accepted, I'm wanted.
Wow.
It's going to feel good for a while and then leave him empty.
Yeah.
So at some point, he needs to deal with that.
I've always heard. Go ahead.
One thing I was going to mention is when I teach classes in human sexuality, one thing I talk about is that often the patterns, the stories, the narratives in what people look at or what draws them, in some ways can be a metaphor to something that's missing in their life. Because porn isn't just about sex. Every porn scenario has a scenario. And I really believe that in addition to just dealing with things like deprivation, things like shame, things like lack of relationships, that sometimes the scenarios that people are drawn to, you know, say, okay, what is it you're attracted to? And we find a particular scenario or script or something, and often that script is a metaphor to some place where that person is emotionally wounded.
There's a brokenness there.
Yeah.
There's a story behind that brokenness.
Yeah, it might be a power thing. It might be a thing of gender. You know, I don't feel like a real man, and, you know, I watch these, you know, when I'm watching this woman writhe in ecstasy looking at me or something, temporarily, you know, I feel whole.
I think that's so true, you know. Yeah. You often hear that the earliest age that a kid in America is being exposed to pornography, somewhere around the age of 11, some studies say it's maybe around 8, some as low as 5. How do we deal with a generation that's coming up and they're being exposed to pornography so early in life?
Yeah, one of the challenges of that is that the images in porn are so different from real life. And so we are now at a situation where an awful lot of young men have their whole concept of women, of relationships, of intimacy. It's all shaped by porn. And then they get into a relationship with a real woman, and she's nothing like Miss Pixel. And we're getting a lot more struggles with young men who are saying, man, this whole dating thing and this whole actual relationship, this is tough.
It is. Yeah, so true. So they're not getting a reality check about what real relationship is about.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I stress, in addition to, you know, paying attention to metaphors, making sure you have enough, you know, relational energy in your life, is to look at making sex something you view as part of a holistic relational context. It's a whole lot less likely to go out of control if it isn't just about sex. It's about a person.
For sure.
It's about love. It's about expression. It's about...
it's about real intimacy, yeah, with the real person.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Calvin and Paul, you guys have been terrific. Unhooked, we'll be right back.
One of the roles I've seen in God leading in my life is to be able to be honest with other people. And I had to really think about, you know, is sharing my story, is why am I doing that? And I guess what I would want to say is that I think in my life, had someone been able to share their story and been honest that, you know, they were struggling in this area, it would have allowed me to see that I could be honest with somebody. I went for 20 years where I didn't share this with anybody. Zero. I'm not saying that people didn't know, but I certainly didn't share it. Satan had me hooked. Satan had me hooked for a long time. I've worked for decades trying to control it. And when I'm saying to, in my own life, I can handle it, what I'm really saying is, God, I don't need you. And I know where that's led in the past. And as long as I keep trying to handle things, I'll get the same outcome that I have in the past. I believe God promises the power to give us freedom from what we're struggling with. But as long as we can't be honest and open to share it with God and to share it with others, I think we're pretty much limiting God's power working in our lives. And it wasn't until I could acknowledge that I needed help. That's the point where I was unhooked, where God could finally start working in my life in the way He has always wanted to, but I wasn't allowing Him to. My name is Todd, and I'm unhooked.
Pornography is a struggle for far too many people in this world. Even Christian men and women struggle with this problem. Research shows that approximately 60% of Christian men struggle with pornography at some point in their life, and about 10% of women. One of the challenges of pornography is that rather than being able to look at a person as a person, we objectify them and thereby use them. Todd was one such person. He was a deacon in his church, a man who was attempting to be an upstanding Christian, and yet he had this secret sin. For many, many years, he couldn't tell anyone. Finally, he reached his bottom, and he decided to reach out for help. And he shares that in the telling of his story, the power of that addiction was broken. This is so important, to have safe places where we can talk about what's really going on with us without the guilt and the shame of condemnation. And so, are our churches safe places? Are our congregations places that we can share about these kinds of struggles without being condemned? Jesus is in the midst of our challenges. He's in the midst of our story. He is the safest person to tell our story to. He has a story about our story, and his story is about where he was. In his word, he reassures us, "I will never leave you nor forsake you." He says, "I will be with you in trouble." So no matter what you're going through, Jesus was already there. Now, he is not just a God of today, but he's also a God of tomorrow, but he is also a God of yesterday. So whatever it is that you are going through, God knows about it. Because he knows about it so personally, because he was there, and he wasn't there just as an onlooker, he was actively involved in your story, he knows exactly what you need today. He knows the pain, he knows how to reassure you, he knows the words that will comfort your wounds and your hurts deep inside. That's the kind of God that I have learned to love. My name is Dr. David, and for many years, I've struggled with problems of addictive natures as well. And I have found God to be everything that I have needed for recovery. His presence has been a peace that has washed over me. For information about how you can break away from habits that hurt, contact Adventist Recovery Ministries. And for prayer, call 1-888-446-7388. Choose to become unhooked today.